Welcome to Just Break Up, the podcast about love, heartbreak, and all the relationship advice you don't want to hear. My name is Sierra DeMolder.
And I'm Sam Blackwell. And today we're going to answer a letter from somebody whose boyfriend went to a strip club. But before we begin, we just want to give you our Surgeon General's warning, which is that Sierra and I are not licensed mental health practitioners.
No, we don't know what we're talking about. And these are just our opinions. And we are not trained in any of this. So please take our advice as you see fit. We're only here to offer our humble musings as a supplement to your mental health, you know, regimen. to hopefully shed some understanding and maybe some laughs about the incredibly rewarding but mostly confusing experience that is love.
Have you ever been to a strip club?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever been? Yeah. Have you ever been to like an average gay bar?
Yeah. So I've been to gay bars where there have been naked people.
Yep. But you have not been to, like, to
burlesque shows, but I've never been to a strip club. Mm-hmm. Strip club. Yeah.
Yeah. I have gone with partners, actually.
Oh, huh. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen them on The Real Housewives, but I've never been to one.
Yeah. Okay. So it's Monday. And before we dive into the strip club letter, we have a fun check-in topic. And that topic is inspired by a lawsuit that is happening right now on February 14th, Valentine's Day. The owner of Tinder, Hinge, and The League were sued, basically. There's a class action lawsuit. In this class action lawsuit filed on Valentine's Day, six dating app users accused Match Group, the owner of all those, of having predatory business models and deliberately, quote, employing psychologically manipulative features to ensure that they remain on the app perpetually as paying subscribers. The lawsuit argues that Match's app violates consumer protection laws. I'm reading a couple paragraphs from an NPR article, and I think it's a Washington Post article. I can't remember where I got it. I'm sorry. And that's
terrible
literally
English
not
major,
how you cite.
Not, yeah. Yeah, not citing your source.
I just
source.
Googled it like 5 seconds ago, and I just wanted to be able to explain this well. It says, Match intentionally designs the platforms with addictive game-like design features, which lock users into a perpetual pay-to-play loop that prioritizes corporate profits over the marketing promises and customer relationship goals, you know, that literally.
Yeah, because they're like, we want you to delete the app, but then they like create an app that's addictive.
Exactly. Hinge's advertising slogan boasts that it's, quote, designed to be deleted. And the lawsuit claims that Match's Group's dating apps are really designed to turn users into addicts who don't find true love and instead keep purchasing subscriptions and other paid perks to keep the publicly traded company revenues flowing. And the legal action against Match Group joins a new crop. This is from the NPR article, a new crop of lawsuits challenging tech companies, including Google, Instagram, Meta owns Instagram and TikTok, in an attempt to hold platforms accountable for exacerbating the youth mental health crisis. Mm. So I thought it was a little on topic for us.
Yeah, it feels really on brand.
Both on topic and off topic, which is exactly our brand. I just wanted to bring it to the Just Break Up table and get your opinion on it. And I also want to just use it as a reminder for folks who are on these apps and are feeling anxiety from them, feeling addicted to them, feeling isolated from them, feeling like they are churning and turning and putting this energy in. I want to use this as an opportunity to remind you that all of these apps are designed to make us feel that way, designed to make us feel like we have to stay on it forever, to that the next best match is just right out there behind this paywall. So give me your thoughts, Sam.
Absolutely.
I know you
just
hate,
like,
big
27
tech.
More swipes. I do hate big tech. I know I'm sitting in a place currently where I'm really frustrated with the ways in which big tech, and particularly social media, have caused lots of harm to lots and lots of people and are not being held accountable in any meaningful way. So at the very least, I think that this is exciting because I think it calls attention to the ways in which, like, this company is talking out of both sides of its mouth about, like, what it's trying to do. And I think it's important for us to recognize that, because I think it's important for us to be able to look at these companies like Google and Meta and Apple and Match Group or whatever owns this, and look at them and realize that they don't have our best interests at heart, right? Like, their corporate model is to figure out how to get you to use the thing more often so that they can make more money off of it. Like, that's the bottom line. That's what corporations are designed to do, right? Like, that's the system we have in place. So, like, I'm excited about the idea of, like, challenging the narrative that these apps are designed to be helpful for you, because they're not. They're designed to make people money. And I think if we go into our interactions with these apps with that clear-headedness around what the actual intent of them is, and to figure out how we want to use them knowing that that's the truth, I think that we're going to be much better off in how we use some of these apps, or whether we use them at all, right? Like, whether we decide that we want to participate in that. But I think we've just... the tech companies have done such a good job of selling us this lie that they are somehow looking out for us, or that they have, like, the best interests of, like, the world at heart, which is absolutely not true. They say it, but the actions don't actually reflect it, which I think is important in this Match thing, where it's like, yeah, Hinge's mission or whatever is to, like, get people to delete the app at some point. But the model that they've created, right? Like, the algorithm that they've created does exactly the opposite. So, like, you can say whatever bullshit you want to me about your corporate mission, but, like, I think it's important for us to, like, look at what is actually happening, which is that, like, these apps make people feel like shit. They are designed to keep people on board with them. You know, I'm thinking about that letter that we answered a while ago, and I don't remember who was on Patreon, but she, like, woke up to her boyfriend, like, still on Bumble.
Yep. That was a primary episode a couple weeks ago.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm thinking about that, like, it's still unacceptable behavior, to be clear, but I'm thinking about it in the way that, like, those apps are so addicting that, like, it kind of makes sense that, like, he couldn't put it down, because, like, the promise of the endorphin rush of just, like, swiping and seeing and, like, getting that, like, little dopamine hit every time. Like,
totally.
Our brains are starved for this kind of stuff in lots of different ways. And so, like, it makes sense that that was happening still inexcusable. And I hope that she broke up with him, like, to be really clear, but I'm thinking about that particular letter and thinking about, like, yeah, this shit's addictive. Like, yeah, of course people, like, don't know how to stop it. Right. Like, they don't know how to put it down. And, like, that's, I don't know. I have a lot of opinions about big tech, so I'm really on my high horse about this one.
No. Stay on that damn horse. You know, you want to hear something really embarrassing and affirming to everything we're saying? A couple weeks ago, my blind date was the social, or, like, the phone usage blocker app, Opal. And during that blind date, so that app helps you create, like, blocks where you can set a schedule where you can't access certain apps, right? And I told y'all that I had my block set from, you know, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. every day. I couldn't access, like, social media. And I realized after a couple weeks, I was like, no, I'm going to do this more. Like, it doesn't really help me to have access to it in the afternoon. Really, it's most helpful for me to get on social media after my baby goes to bed, my toddler. So I changed it. So every single day, my phone is blocked on social media from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. But the fucking humbling thing is, this bitch of an app tells you how many times you go and open Instagram and it blocks it. And I cannot, the number is so embarrassing. The number is so, how many times I compulsively, knowing the app is blocked, my hand picks up my phone and opens that app. And it's like, Instagram has already been blocked 6 times today. And it's 9 in the morning. Do you know what I mean? I share that just to embarrass myself and, you know, encourage everybody to, like, try to cut that tie a little bit, because it's a lot stronger, this invisible tie we have, this invisible addiction we have to social media and, you know, big tech company products like dating apps and stuff like that. Obviously, the frustrating part is they also have a huge monopoly on the way we connect.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Social media, yep. Dating apps, it is the way we have learned how to have connection. And also, it's incredibly disconnected and isolating. Like the fact that we can have 100 Facebook friends, but not feel like we can talk to any of them on the phone or like meet up in person, or we can get get 100 likes on an Instagram post, but people aren't asking us or truly knowing what's going on in our life in a deeper, more meaningful way. And then in dating, it's like, this is the way. This is where people are meeting each other. I was thinking, as I was like getting ready for this episode, I was thinking about like, okay, well, what would a world look like without dating apps? And we would really have to like work as a culture at talking to strangers, which is like the most terrifying thing.
For sure.
like the cold call, the thing that all of us millennials struggle with and avoid and, you know, write scripts for to like call our pharmacist or whatever. You know, but like we would if I had a date right now and I didn't want to use the app for like moral reasons, I would have to see that cute person in the coffee shop and be like, I know nothing about you. How are you? How's your day? What's going on? Like, do you want to connect as a human with me or whatever?
For sure.
We are not skilled in that anymore. And there's no shame in that because like, don't get me wrong. I'm the person who avoids phone calls. I'm socially anxious. Strangers make me nervous. So I get it. And also, this is feeding into a bigger disconnect, I guess.
For sure. Absolutely. And that's why I think it's important to like hold these apps for what they are, which is like they can be useful for sure. Right. Like, you know, I think that NPR article said that like an estimated 10 to 50% of people have found a partner through an online dating app. Like Peter and I knew each other before we started dating, but like we started dating because of an online dating app, right? Like I have used them. I know. And like the people in my friend group who have found people like after college have all used dating apps to find them, right? Like, and so I think it's about how do we use this tool in a way that also recognizes and holds to be true the fact that it's like, it can be harmful and addictive to us, right? Like in the same way we might think about like decisions about what sorts of like drugs we want to use, right? Like thinking about like, okay, what do I have to do? I need this thing and I know that it can cause harm. So how am I going to do it in a way that is like watching out for stuff that, right? Like how am I putting friction between me and this thing? How am I using it particularly for a purpose and not just like mindfully or mindlessly like swiping, but actually trying to sort of use this tool in a way that is in pursuit of a goal? Because if we're not, and this is the case in so many different things, like social media is like, if we're not using it with that intention, it will suck us in, right? Like it is designed to make us do a bunch of things that are not in alignment with our values or our goals, because it gamifies everything and it triggers our brain chemicals. Like it's designed to do this. So I think it's important to recognize like, yeah, dating apps are like a necessary evil in so many ways in the dating world. And like we need to be really aware of how much harm they can cause us and the fact that they're designed to keep us engaged, right? Like that's what they're designed to do, not necessarily to help us find somebody. They can be a tool to get there, but that's not what they're designed to do. They're designed to keep us engaged.
Yes, exactly. So take this all with a grain of salt or sand or whatever grain of your preference.
Oh, for sure. I love that. We're grain inclusive on this podcast.
know that this is a path to connection, but we also want you to be able to protect yourself and nurture yourself when you know that you need a break or whatnot. So just a little fuel for your fire on a Monday morning. You want to dive into today's letter?
Any opportunity I get to yell about big tech. If anyone wants to talk to me about what's happening with Uber and Lyft in Minneapolis, I would love to.
Join us. right, let's get... our Patreon office hours.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's get into today's letter, which is from Strippers in Securities, whose pronouns are she, her, who is writing from a business trip I'd rather he not book again. I'll make this as brief as I can. When I began listening to you, I was in the midst of leaving a domestically abusive partnership. This is relevant as you not only supplemented my healing once leaving, but have become two friends on whom I can rely as I'm almost 2 years into the best relationship of my life. He, 24, and I, she, her, and queer, 25, have been friends for a while, and this relationship is secure, communicative, wholesome, and hot and heavy, as well as someone I could see myself being with forever. Yikes. That's great and whatever, but strippers? Long story short, my partner went away on a business trip. While he was gone, he went into a strip club. Literally went in. No money was exchanged to get in, nor did he spend any. I'm a sex educator and have no problem with sex work. However, I felt incredibly disappointed in him. Partly this was because he had a terrible flight and day that he arrived, so I was worried about him, heard nothing, only to find out he was at a strip club? What in the Mad Men? Am I in a soap opera? He told me the following day, and we spoke about it with some heat, but I told him we would move on. My partner was curious and nothing more. He assured me it wasn't to do with an inadequacy in our sex life or relationship, etc. He went alone. He was in there for maybe 5 minutes and that's it. The problem is now I'm trying to move forward. I know I need to reestablish some trust, which I'm sad to say was wobbled. But what's more, I think I was looking for a reason to mistrust him, to berate myself into feeling not good enough, and feeling that all too comfortable negative self-talk creep up. How do we move through this as a stronger relationship? And how do I not become dependent on his opinion or so hyper-independent as a response? Please feel free to explore this widely. I feel like shit, and I don't know how to move through this with confidence. Yours, with heaps of love and joy, and when I have them, wads of cash, strippers in securities. XXX. What? I think the X's are kisses or porny. I don't know.
Maybe a little bit of both. All right, my darling. Thank you so much for writing and trusting us with this letter. I'm sorry you're feeling like your trust has been wobbled. I'm sorry you're feeling like a little disoriented by this experience. And most importantly, I'm sorry you're feeling insecure by the choice that your partner made. I definitely have been in your shoes before and have had to, you know, really question my internalized assumptions around sex work and around, it brings up a lot of the stuff we talk about when we talk about demonogamizing the mind. I am monogamous. I'm in a monogamous relationship as I have always been. But lately I've been challenging the thoughts in my head about like, what does it mean to let my partner see somebody else naked, you know, is what does that mean for me? You know? Mm-hmm. So I'm getting ahead of myself. We're going to get into all of that and hopefully make you feel affirmed and also, you know, comfortably pushed to examine some of these insecurities and what they're trying to tell you. And most importantly, I want you to be able to have more open and honest dialogue with your partner about what the future parameters of your relationship are. But first, we have to take a very quick break. Spring has sprung and summer is just around the corner. Packing your bag with sunscreen, your emotional support water bottle, and that steamy beach read. But wait, this year, there's a new kind of essential that's right at your fingertips. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short, spicy audio stories. They bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. Discover stories about second chance romances, adventurous vacation flings, and hot and heavy hookups.
And get this, there's a growing library of fantasy series with werewolves, Greek gods and goddesses, Regency era, historical fiction, my absolute favorite, and fairy smut to explore the bounds of your pleasure. New content is released every week, so in between listening to your favorite stories again and again, you will always find something new to explore. Dipsy offers a modern approach to romance through high quality and captivating audio fiction.
For listeners of this show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/justbreakup. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipsestories.com/justbreakup. dipsystories.com/justbreakup.
All right, everyone, welcome back. I think what I want to sort of start with is just a general statement that, like, Sierra and I support sex work and, like, think that strippers are great if they are doing what they want to do and are getting adequately compensated for it and are not being, like, exploited or forced in any way, right? You know, I think that Sierra and I both kind of look at strip clubs as, like, this is a thing that people do, right? And as long as everyone is, like, consensual and respectful, like, great, you know, like, we get to decide what the parameters of our relationships are. So we get to decide what's in and out of bounds in terms of what people do in our relationships. So for some folks in some relationships, going to a strip club might not be a big deal. And for some other folks in relationships, going to a strip club might be off limits. And, like, both of those things are okay. They're both understandable. And I can also totally understand, even as somebody who's, like, you know, like, I go to gay bars, right? Like, people are stripping in gay bars all the time. Like, you're just, like, chatting with your friends on, like, a Tuesday night and there's, like,
there's
a naked man.
Man,
like,
in the shower. Yeah,
absolutely. Like, it
and
is.
And there's a shower on the wall is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Like, it's
oh,
a thing.
Oh, your bars,
you know,
don't, like, have, like, public showers in the middle of them?
Seriously, sometimes I, like, we're talking about a very specific bar in Minneapolis, and, like, sometimes I bring people there and I forget that there's a shower, and because it's, I'm so not even, like, paying attention, yeah, to it or, like, thinking about it in any way. And then I'm like, no. Oh, that's right. I brought my coworker to a bar where there's, like, a literal man naked dancing in a shower.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I wonder how hot that water is. Cause that's an old
steamy
building. Do you know what I mean? I could never dance in a shower if the water was cold. Anyway,
my question is, like, who's cleaning the floor of that shower?
They're not,
like,
they're not out there in their gym flip-flops. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. Like, athlete's foot. Anyway. Right. So, like, all this to say that, like, I'm pretty cool with strip clubs and I'm, like, and I'm pretty not fazed by the idea that people go to them. And also I can understand that, like, in the context of your relationship, this felt like a breach of trust to you, right? Like, it made you feel wobbly, right? Like, he went alone. Like, what was happening? He wasn't talking to you, right? There's, like, a lot of exacerbating circumstances here that I think are kind of, like, challenging what it sounds like you value, which is, like, sex work is work and, like, people should get paid adequately to do things that they want to do with their bodies. With, like, what does it mean in this specific instance for my boyfriend to go to this strip club after not talking to me? Right. Like, right. And, like, sometimes these things kind of get, like, muddled together and then we're like, wait a minute, what am I thinking? What am I doing? Right. Like, but I want to talk about this very specific instance and be like, I don't know if it was actually about the strip club that was, like, the issue here. And I think it seems like it was about, like, the lack of communication about said strip club, right? Like, about the fact that he, like, didn't talk to you for a whole day.
Yes. Right? Like, yes. Like, I'll even add, as someone who has had this lived experience prior to, like, having a little bit of a shift in my perspective years ago, probably, like, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, somebody who I was, like, casually seeing, but was, like, really invested in, which is very me. Anyway, they went to a strip club and I remember just being like, what is happening? You know, like, what is happening? What is happening in my body? What does this mean? Why is this making me feel so insecure? And so I think added to the idea that, like, maybe he was alone and he didn't tell you that he was going or whatever, I think there's a lot of, like, societal assumptions and implications around strip clubs that we don't really challenge a lot because we live in, like, a weird puritanical society that shames sex work and assumes that sexuality is deviant at all times. And we're really taught from a really young age that, like, our partners finding other people attractive is a threat to us, especially as women. Like, I'm sure this is true for everybody, but I, like, you know, I can't remember a time in which I wasn't threatened by someone else's beauty, you know, when I was younger. Mm. I don't feel that way now, but, like,
for sure,
that was,
yeah,
really prevalent when I was a teenager and growing older, is just feeling like it, you know, the scarcity of desire, feeling like my partner couldn't find someone more attractive than me or couldn't find someone else as attractive as me, or like,
yeah,
I've told like there's like times.
A limited level of amount of attraction to go around. And if you spent it on someone else, he wasn't spending it on you.
and the vision, the stereotypes that we have around strippers, like I've shared this like 100 times, but the Britney Spears story about my high school boyfriend, like, I remember my high school boyfriend telling me that Britney Spears was so hot, and me being like, how could he think me, little flat-chested brunette, dirty blonde Sierra at that time, and Britney Spears are both attractive. Like, he's telling me that both of those things are true. And back then I couldn't handle the dissonance. And I think the same thing comes up in a situation like this. If you support sex work and you trust your partner, what's coming up is that inherited dissonance that is really hard to hold. Like, how can my boyfriend go to a strip club and still be sexually fulfilled by me? It feels impossible, but it's not impossible. We can contain so much, right? And how can my boyfriend go and want to see people naked and still love seeing me naked? And how can I not be threatened by that? These are some of the questions that I've had to ask myself over the years, or, you know, ask myself as I have leaned towards security in my relationship and demonogamizing my mind. You know, it is impossible to expect my partner to not find other people attractive, or I don't want to limit their experience in a way that feels safe to me or whatever. I think something that Sam said earlier is really important is that, like, Sam and I both agree that everybody has different, just like everybody has a different understanding or parameters of cheating in their relationship. Each relationship also has different parameters or shared understanding around what breaks trust or not. You know, like, I will say I would be totally fine if my wife went to a strip club, and I would be probably 80% fine if she went without telling me. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, there's communication fosters trust, fosters security, right? And so the fact that he didn't go, and maybe you've never talked about this before, or maybe, you know, maybe that the fact that he didn't give you a heads up does let your mind wander and run wild in terms of, like, well, what was he hiding or whatever. But then you have to ask yourself, well, what if he did tell you in advance? You probably would have had the exact same.
Yeah, you probably
would have the exact same reaction. So then anxiety. You have to deal with the discomfort. What's the discomfort? Are you afraid of what his desire for other people means? Do you not want him looking at other people naked? Like, where are the bounds of your discomfort here? Because I feel like lots of emotions are flaring up right now, but you're trying to pin them on things without actually being like, okay, what do I have a problem with here? And how can we collectively, me and my partner, work through it? Like, because you can say that your trust is wobbled, and also you need to figure out exactly why. Why is it wobbled? Is it because you don't want him going to strip clubs, or is it because him going to strip clubs makes you feel insecure? Because they're different. If you feel insecure, then those feelings are yours. You have to process them and then establish boundaries to prevent them or deal with them in the future, you know?
Yeah, because I think it's important. I think what you're getting at is, like, this idea of, like, what is the letter writers to hold, and what is, like, the collective
partnership,
both of them. Yeah, the partnerships to hold. And, like, some of it for sure is about, like, okay, well, where is this coming from? Like, what is this insecurity? And is it tied to, like, the reality of this relationship, or is it tied to something else? Right. And what part of that do I want to own? And it's also perfectly reasonable for you to say, hey, this made me feel really shitty. And can we put some parameters around how you engage with this type of stuff in the future so that I don't feel as shitty next time this happens, right? Like, I'm trying to own that, like, I'll probably feel uncomfortable with this, but it's also not outside of my values, right? Like, it's not like we're doing something that, like, is terrible, right? It's just that there's stuff that comes up for me around this. So next time you decide to go to a strip club, right? Like, is it that we communicate about it, right? Like, or even is it that, like, next time you go on a business trip, don't not talk to me for a day, like, no matter how terrible your flight is. Like, I think that that's really reasonable. Or is it that, like, don't go to a strip club alone, right? Like, if you want to go with a bunch of your friends, like, that's fine with me, but, like, alone, that feels like it's crossing the line. And part of it is, like, establishing and understanding some of where the edges and boundaries are versus what your preferences are, right? Like, your preference might be, this man never walks into a strip club ever again in his entire life, right? But that's not a boundary or like
an edge. My preference is that my wife has never had sex with anyone else in her entire life. But we found each other late in life. So that preference cannot be, you know, actualized.
That's funny. Yeah, absolutely, right? Like, your preference might be, I don't know where I'm going with this.
I am the most attractive person she has ever seen. And she has never laid her eyes or her hands on anyone else, period.
Yeah, your preference would be that Willow never looks at another person ever again.
Right? No, that's not my preference. It's that she looks at them and is like, oh, my wife is hotter.
Right?
Delusions.
So funny. But the thing is that, like, often what happens is that we, like, mix up our preferences and our boundaries. And when people are doing something that makes us uncomfortable, we're like, this is a huge issue. And it's like, no, sometimes people are going to do things that make us uncomfortable, but are still in alignment with our values, right? Like, they're still not crossing a line. And it's up to you two to talk with each other to figure out, like, okay, well, where are those hard edges? So that then both of you know where to not step. And also, both of you then also know, what sort of self-work do I have to do when the discomfort comes up, even though we're still in our boundaries, right? Like, even though we're still in where we have agreed to be. And that can be really helpful in, like, what Sierra said, where it's like, wait a minute, is this mine? Is this yours? Is this ours? Right? Like, that stuff has to be figured out together through some of this conversation.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, silver lining, I'm proud that he told you. I'm glad that he was upfront with you. Not so silver lining, I don't like that he didn't give you a heads up. Like, that feels non-communicative intentionally, which again feeds that insecurity fire. But this is a discomfort that you can work through, that your relationship can work through. Like, I don't think he's a terrible, he's not Don Draper out here, right? Yeah. Like, it's not that, right? It doesn't have to be that. And also, in the exact same moment, your feelings are valid. Your insecurity is valid. Like, it's about holding it both. Like, hey, something is hurting right now, so I'm going to nurture it. And also, I'm going to see, like, how much of this hurt am I clinging to because I'm uncomfortable, you know?
For sure.
Again, Sam and I have no judgment in any direction on this letter. Like, if you want your boyfriend to never go to a strip club again, cool. That sounds like a great boundary that's going to do well in your relationship, hypothetically, you know?
Hypothetically, yeah, as long as he consents to it, you know?
And also, there are a lot of things here that we can unpack and sort of say, like, did I inherit this? Is this mine? Are these my true feelings? And are these feelings in alignment with who I want to be in this relationship? You know, I think it's a yes and this whole time. So, yep. My darling, we're so glad that you wrote. We hope that this helps. And we hope that, I'm looking at your letter right now. In the very end, it says, like, when I have wads of cash, this is how I'll support you, which is really, really poignant for a letter about a strip club.
Yeah, I was thinking, yeah, like, you can throw those wads of cash at us. Oh, that's fine.
All right. My darling, we love you. We hope this helps.
Absolutely. Thank you for writing. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. If you want more Unhinged content from us, you can always support us on Patreon. If you support us on Patreon for as little as $5 a month, you'll get an additional bonus weekly episode. One recent Patreon episode we did was talking about our favorite, like, relationship-oriented songs and whether or not they were actually so healthy relationships. So if that's the type of content you are interested in, you can support us on Patreon. That's patreon.com/justbreakuppod.
You can slide into our DM, send us your favorite relationship meme, but most importantly, you can submit your questions about all matters of the heart at justbreakuppod.com, which is also where you can find our merchandise.
Please remember to like, follow, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating and review. This literally keeps our mics on and helps us reach more brokenhearted souls who need two random strangers giving them relationship advice.
Just Break Up is a production of Duveed Media, original music, recording, editing, producing, all magical things by our good friend Spencer Worth Davis. Make sure to check out his podcast. And remember, it's okay to feel uncomfortable. It's okay to have an experience test the bounds and parameters of your understanding of your comfort. And it's okay to defend that comfort. It's okay to say, nope, this is a boundary for me. This is going to be a hard no. We can use these experiences as opportunities to better know ourselves and our relationships. And it's also okay to lean into that discomfort to see what it has to teach us. And if all else fails,
just break up.